This is The Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. Today's podcast is the beginning of our new season, and we have a special guest, Ray McNulty, joining us through Zoom, and so we will work on the audio as much as we can to make it sound okay for the podcast. Ray serves in a lot of different capacities throughout his life, and he'll explain some of that in the interview. Mostly, though, we're going to be focusing on this idea of a VUCA world. That's V-U-C-A, and now adding an H to the end, world. And they'll explain more about that in the podcast. We hope that you enjoy this podcast with Ray McNulty and Kendall Terry. We'd like to welcome to the podcast today Ray McNulty, and Ray McNulty has been involved in the Successful Practices Network, National Dropout Prevention, and so many other things. I'd have a hard time listing it all here for the podcast. And so first, I'm going to give Ray a chance to introduce himself to our listening audience. So Ray, thank you for being on the podcast.
Hey, thanks. Thanks so much, Kendall, and I appreciate it. And the short story is I can't keep a job. I started as a teacher and a principal and an assistant superintendent in Vermont. And then I became the commissioner of education in the state of Vermont. And while I was doing that, I was at a meeting and some people from the Gates Foundation were there, and they sent me a note and said, would you like to come work for us? So then I left the commissioner's position and went to work for the Gates Foundation in the early years. Hung in there with that, traveling all over the world, looking at different schools and different options for learning, and that was really a great experience. But then I got caught up with Bill Daggett, and I joined Bill's team, and I've been with Bill ever since the early 2000s, maybe 2006 or so, And in that time with Bill, I was the president of ICLE and did lots of work. But then I took it upon myself to realize that what's interesting is that the world is exploding in the online world, and I'm supposedly an educator and I don't know much about it. So I didn't leave Bill. I continually stay connected to Bill and the work he does. But I left to become a chief learning officer for Bain Venture Capital's acquisition of a company called Penn Foster. They're a big, large online company. And I went to work for Penn Foster under them, learned a lot about the online world, then went to be the dean at Southern New Hampshire University in their School of Education. And all the time continuing to have my touch with Bill continuing. And then after the university's work, Bill called one day and said, I really could use you to run SPN and NDPC, and they're getting bigger. And so I did. I came back to work with Bill. And then just recently, I've just become so dedicated to the work of the future of education that I still remain with SPN, but I am no longer the president. I'm the senior fellow. And basically what I'm doing is I'm focusing my time on thought leadership and putting all the day-to-day routine things aside. Yeah. So this is my first podcast as in my new role, and I'm very excited about it and very excited to be sitting with you, Kendall, because I appreciate your thinking, the work you all do at Clayton Bradley, but particularly this paper you just sent me just recently about the VUCA world.
Yeah.
So that was interesting.
And that's why I asked you to be on the podcast, was because this summer, and I've actually been to more than one conference where I've heard you talk about the VUCA world. That's V-U-C-A. And then even this conference, you added an H, at least for a split second. I don't know if you're beholden to the H being at the end.
I am beholden to it.
But as I was reflecting this summer, we were in D.C. together at the Future Focused Schools Conference. And, Clayton Bradley was honored to be a part of that and to be one of those schools that were able to present and representing schools that are looking at the future and saying, how can we prepare kids, as many times you would hear at the conference, for their future and not our past. And so looking at what world are they going to walk out into as adults, which is so important. Many times in education, we do focus on educating to things that we thought were important, or, you know, things that we think are even important right now as an adult, and not thinking about when this kid that's 12 years old right now in our middle school is an adult, what is that world going to look like? And we're at this, I would say, unprecedented time of human history. I know probably everybody would say that, as, you know, in their life, but the speed at which things change right now, I feel like, is faster than possibly things have ever changed in human history, of just the onslaught of technology and what technology is able to do and replace things that we think, oh, that job will always be there, is not necessarily always going to be there. You know, even stuff that, you know, we would say those, you know, jobs like even a manual labor job, like guys that go around and cut lawns, and you'd go, oh, well, that job is always going to be needed. Well, there are whole lawn services now that will take these robot, you know, robot lawn machines and lawnmowers and drop them off, and they're cutting whole subdivisions just by themselves. You know, it's one person running, you know, 7 or 8 yards because they've just got all of these machines out there, and then they go back and pick them all up. And it's so, even things like that we go, oh, that job will always be needed. Technology now is changing the world in ways that we don't fully even understand of what that's going to look like in 5, 10 years for the kids that are currently in our middle schools and high schools, that they're going to be walking out into this. And so when I heard you again this summer talk about the VUCA world, it, you know, it got my mind going again, and thinking about, for Clayton Bradley, how are we addressing this so that we're preparing kids for their future and not continuing just to do things because this is how we've always done it, or, you know, well, this is, you know, what society says every, you know, 12-year-old needs to know. Sometimes that's important to understand, and then sometimes it's like we've got to also pay attention to the world they're going to walk out into as an adult, and it's different than the world that I currently live in as an adult.
Absolutely, and, you know, it's interesting to listen to you as you kind of went through the kind of like a series of points, and this idea that the world is changing incredibly fast, and we forget how slow change occurred as we look back. And in our, many of us, and I'm older than you, I know, but what I will say is that you know, I remember covering my books to protect them because the books in school were, you know, very valuable, and they were going to be around for 10 or more years. Yeah. And content was very rigidly held, and it was very repetitive. Yeah, that's just not the world we live in today. And as I've said many times, you know, the inside of school, the aim of education is to have our kids not do well in school, but do well in the lives they lead outside of school. And the outside the inside of schools has to replicate the outside in order for that to be really good. And what we do know is that it's very it's unpredictable. And it is, as you've clearly stated, it's a VUCA world. It's volatile, uncertain, complex, ambiguous. And it, not only that, but now because of technology and because of the way we communicate, it's lightning speed technology. I mean, just this past weekend, I think, or maybe it was, yeah, Sunday, I think, wasn't it, that the president announced he was, you know, so at 1:45, he told his cabinet, and at 1:46, it was nationally in every news network. You know, a minute later, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
Right. And just imagine that, and imagine, you know, how quickly things like that travel. And once it does, I get to put it in my network, and you get to put it in your network, and it's massive.
Yeah.
Right. So we, you know, it's a very different world for students to grow up and live in. And our kids born from 2010 on, I think that's called now Generation Alpha. This generation has had access to more information in their lives than any other generation. Mm. At the fingertips of their hand, they have access to everything. Do you suppose they look at the world differently than we did? I guess so. And I spent some time at the conference. I don't know if you attended one of my sessions on Wednesday morning, but on Wednesday morning I had a sophomore from high school in my group with me. Grayson is his name, and Grayson was in there, and a lot of the faculty, a lot of people in the room were talking about cell phones, and they were basically saying, you know, we're really starting to decide we've got to hold back on those. We've got to restrict them. And Grayson picked his phone up in front of the room. He said, he looked at them, he said, I get it. He said, but I'm going to tell you what I've seen walking around this conference for the last 2.5 days. I've seen adults staring at their phones up and down the halls all over the place. And, you know, it might be new to you. I was born with that, right? Yeah. And this is our life. So, you know, it's like, what do you want me to do? You know, if we need to teach protocol and things like that, that's one thing. But to think about just taking technology out of the hands of these kids that were born with technology because we didn't have it. You know, I know there's a good and a bad to everything that's out there. What we have to do is figure out how we accent the good and we de-emphasize and put in place things that can help us avoid the challenges. Because I don't believe there's anything, whether it is, you know, whatever we've implemented in our schools or whatever, any company implements something, there's always a good and a bad side to it.
Yeah.
It's not always good. And what we have to do is figure out how we manage that. And our kids need to see us struggling and navigating the future because that's what they have to do. One of the keys in the VUCA world is that the world we live in right now, we have very few problems to solve. They're not problems. Problems have solutions. What we get confronted with are messes and conundrums and, you know, bad, strange, weird options. And there's not, you know, not a solution. Like a bus breaks down, okay, we got to fix it, right? We got to get that done. This isn't like that. So this is all about navigating, navigating problems and challenges and things like that, because there is no simple solution. And I think in our schools too often, we are so strict about right and wrong, and that there's a lot of gray.
Yeah.
In the world, and navigating something means, you know, just like a, you know, you're in a sailboat and it doesn't go straight. It goes where the wind is, and the wind's helpful. And sometimes you're going against the wind, so your trip is you got to go, you know, you got to tack back and forth to just make some headway on the water. That's the world we're in today. It's not a simple solution. And when I look at educational leaders like yourself and others, I just say, this is where we have to really learn our great navigational skills.
Yeah.
Because when people have opposition to something that we're doing, that's okay, because that's what they believe. And we have to understand that. And they have to understand what we're looking at. And then maybe somewhere in the middle, we can figure out a way to leverage it. But it's not like it's very clear and very specific. Does that make any sense?
Absolutely. You know, as you were talking, I was thinking about just some different things, even with my own kids. I have a sophomore in high school. And Sunday, we're sitting at Sunday dinner, you know, with the family, and he looks over at me and he said, the president has pulled out of the race. And I was like, well, you know, I haven't seen that come through, you know. And I pulled up a couple of news agencies even on my phone real quick, and I was like, you know, nobody's reporting this yet. I was like, I don't know, you know, I've heard this already said a couple of times, you know, we'll see. And then it was like, you know, a minute or two later, all of a sudden, then I start seeing it come. And I'm sitting here looking, like, my 15-year-old knew this news, you know, the hyper-connected culture. And because it is just natural to them, you know, and he's connected in ways that I'm not connected, you know, to different sources. And so we were laughing about this because he was like, see, I told you, you know, I knew that already. And so
that's amazing, Kendall, because I had a similar experience when I was working for Penn Foster with the Bain Group. It was during the time we were had offices in Boston. It was during the bombing of the Boston Marathon. And so I was in a meeting. We had a big glass wall. I could see all the employees out in the work area. And they were all standing up and they were talking to each other. And it looked like there was a lot of panic. And I was in the conference room and I came out and I said, "What's up?" They said, "It was a bomb went off at the Boston Marathon, and we're checking on all of our friends that are running and this and that." And I said, "Well, the news is on right there. There's nothing showing." They said, "Oh no, we have pictures." They had pictures of it sent to them by people along the way. So the social media put this out there fast, yeah. Right? So you think of that, you just think, wow. But that's where they're connected. And I'm sitting there looking, waiting for the news to report it. Like, it's a very different world.
It is. And I try not to get caught up in making those statements that, you know, teachers would have made whenever I was coming through high school. You know, we joke about the statement of, you know, a math teacher going, "Well, you got to learn how to do this without a calculator because you're not going to always have a calculator with you." And, you know, looking right here in front of me, you know, I've got a calculator on the iPad that we're zooming on. There's a calculator on this computer. There's a calculator on my phone. I've got a calculator on my watch. You know, I've got like four calculators, and at least three of those are probably more powerful than any calculator I held in high school. You know, and so it's like thinking about that of what are we saying possibly to a student right now of you need the importance of you knowing this is X, you know, you're not always going to have this, or you need to know this for this situation. And then think, you know, is that really the world they're going to live in? Are they not going to have access? And with technology, we know if it's informational, then they have access immediately, right? Like it is there.
Yes, that's a very good point.
And so really I even look at that. With AI and thinking about, you had mentioned, you know, we've got to look at, there's good that can be used here and not run from it because of the bad that somebody might use with it. And, yep. You know, so even looking and talking to our teachers about with AI, you know, we've talked about helping lesson plan, helping come up with ideas, but then looking at how are you addressing this with students? You know, if you've got a student in your class that their native language is Spanish or their native language is Italian or, you know, Russian or whatever. And it is so easy now with AI that you can plug that stuff in, you know, your English into these translator apps and put it directly into their language. And so if the goal is for them to understand content and for us, we talk about mastery-based learning all the time. Our goal is for them to master an understanding of what we're trying to teach. Then we live in a world that's so easy for us to put it in their native language, like so that they get the content. We're still going to work on teaching them English, right? We're still going to work on helping right. them with the language. But it's hard. If I was a science teacher when I was teaching, and if I'm trying to get them to understand biology, I can't also be trying to teach them English at the same time I'm teaching them biology. You know, they're going to miss the biology content at that point because they're going to be focused on learning the English. And so the world we live in now of being able to quickly put that into something that will give them the content they need, and then we can work on the English side of it. You know, and so it's how can we, and that's a great way for students to use that technology. I also remember in college, you know, how many times was I writing a paper at midnight that was due the next day, you know, and I'm going, man, I wish somebody could read this before I turn it in. But at this point, you know, everybody's already gone to bed or it's too late. And now there are tools that you can use to say, I'm not saying AI write my paper, but if I'm saying AI, you know, edit my paper for me, you know, give me some feedback. Well, I'm getting, you know, instant feedback on that paper and make it better before I have to turn it in. And I didn't have to worry about the writing center at the university's not open, or, you know, the people in my peer group are already gone to bed, or, you know, use the tools that are there. Like, this is the world we're living in. It's there.
That's exactly right. And, you know, I've been spending some time, as I said, in my new role, doing a lot of research and thinking and talking with people and talking with students. And, you know, on the AI thing, I really find, you know, the best of our teachers are sharing with their students. Like, you know, an English teacher that I know basically says, I want to give the kids their papers back immediately. So I'm having AI score their papers. But I say to them in the beginning, all right, when it's AI corrected, I will note it on your paper. This is AI assisted correction. And he says to them, when you're writing, and if you use AI, I'd like you to say it's AI assisted writing. I want that to be an openness about using this material. Now, there are kids that, you know, that love writing and they just jump in and they go right at it. But there are many of our students, you know, that struggle with writing, but they have great ideas. So they have a chance to get their idea out by partnering with AI. And I think I've been building this chain of, you know, there's like experiential learning. Experiential intelligence, experience-based intelligence.
Yeah.
When you're in your job so many years, I'm in my job, I gain all kinds of knowledge from the experience. Then there's emotional intelligence, right? We know enough about how do we work with other people? How do we, you know, when we don't agree, do we fire back? So there's a level of emotional intelligence. Then there's, academic content intelligence, right? And you put that in there. Then I think about AI and HI, artificial intelligence and human intelligence. And I think what we have to start to realize is that there's a blend here. You gotta have some content. We know that, all right? But in this crazy VUCA world, we also know that we need emotional intelligence. So we need to have kids be able to develop those kind of skills in their learning. Well, how do they do that? Well, they gotta work with other people. It can't be all about themselves, mm-hmm. right? But we need to make sure that our kids, and I know at Clayton Bradley, you guys have got lots of opportunity for kids to put projects together, work together on a project. You know, when I was working with the Bain Venture Group, they had a plan that basically said kids were going to work on their own, then they were going to work with an assigned partner, then they were going to work with unassigned partners. And they were trying to give them lots of options for how they should gain that kind of experiential learning. You know, how do you, emotional intelligence, experience, all those things are important. And so there's the calculation for what somebody needs to have in their head for the future and to be successful in a VUCA world involves all those. And if you're not good at, you know, having a conversation with the AI that's attached to your hand, you know, now, and everybody has access to it, and in another couple of months, Apple's release of Apple Intelligence is going to make it even more predominant. So what do we say? Stop looking at that? No, what we say is we train them on using their human brain with their artificial intelligence opportunity, and whether it's a co-pilot or whatever. I mean, I think most times I walk into people's houses now, you know, I'm not going to shout out the name of either my Amazon device or my Apple device, because when I do, they answer. But I ask them questions all the time during the day. And so that's the life that they're going to lead, but they have to blend it with human intelligence and thoughts about, you know, kindness and ethics. And those are the things in education, I think, that we need to spend more time, you know, building those pieces around our kids, because it's a very different world. They don't need as much content thrown at them. They need content, and I will never say they don't. And they need to be able to read and write well and have numeracy in their hands. But they don't need as much content. Maybe what we need to do is make some more space in our schools for kids to work on big projects with other kids and other people, and work their way through solving problems and also experiencing failure.
Yeah.
Too many of my students go through school without experiencing failure, and we learn so much from failure. So the VUCA world kind of puts us in a situation where, you know, there's all these moving parts. It's kind of like living in a Cuisinart almost, you know, and somebody's going to hit the button and all of a sudden everything's going to spin. But things do spin, and how do we get our kids to, and I think an important point that I know that I've heard you make, is how do we get them to deal with uncertainty, and how do we get them to be, you know, how do we get them when they don't know something to put the right mindset around it and get into it and solve that problem? That's really what a lot of it's about.
Yeah.
So
we've mentioned VUCA a couple of times, and you did give what those letters stand for, but I'd like to just take a minute to go kind of word by word and let you give a little bit of background on those words what they mean. It comes from a military
yep.
background, I guess, but then we've seen it in business, and you've talked a lot about it in education. And so as you talk about each of these, what are you seeing in that future thinking, that future focused mentality? How are schools either addressing that, or maybe how should schools be thinking about that for their students?
So the most important thing is, like, when you take the word VUCA and you start with that first one, volatility. Volatility can be managed by a school and a system if they have a very, very clear vision of where they want to go. Because what you want is, you want where your North Star is. You want, you need to focus very, very much on that concept of having real clarity about where you want to go. But what will happen is the VUCA world will punish certainty. So you need to be really clear about where you want to go, but you should not be so clear about how you're going to get there. Right? You should not be very specific, because you're going to have to change sail a few times. So volatility, you got to know what you are. So, like, you can look at Google's vision is to organize the world's information so that everybody can learn. All right. So that's what they do. That's what their mission is. That's what their vision is. That's where they're going. And they just stay on track for that. You don't need a billion things. You just need, where do you want to take these people? Where do you want to go? So that's the volatility gets managed by having excellent certainty about where you want to go. Uncertainty, that whole thought of uncertainty is that there's frequent disruptions. There's changes happen all the time, and people like to predict those things, but you can't, because no one knows why, right? There's no clear connection. We see that all the time now. The latest things you hear all the time now about the political polls, well, they're not really accurate, It's okay, well, then there's uncertainty, right? It's uncertain. How you deal with uncertainty as a system and is you focus on your system's sense of understanding the strength of your system, understanding where the strengths are of your system, and capitalize on the strengths of your system. So if you have a really clear vision and you know what the strength of your system is, you then have a strong base to build upon. Because as I think you might know this, when we teach kids how to take a multiple choice test, we tell them when you can look at four questions and you know two of them are not right, you can guess.
Yeah.
Right? Because 50% chance. So when you take a look at the VUCA world, you got to say, look, volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity, start with a clear vision and understand the strengths of your system. Now, when you deal with this issue of complexity in a VUCA world, which is things are multiply connected, they're intertwined. If you touch one thing, everything else breaks you, right? But under complexity, leadership has to have the courage to make a choice. It's about having the courage to make a decision. Well, you can make a decision if you have a clear understanding of where you're going. You're going to work on the strengths of your system. Those are two out of four. You got the ability. Just now you can take a chance, right? But what I suggest under that area is you smallify all your issues, swings. You do small swings, right? You make slight changes to your system, and you adjust as you go. You don't make big changes. So you try to smallify the complexity, smallify it, make it smaller. And then the last part of the VUCA world deals with ambiguity. The whole concept of ambiguity kind of is that there's little clarity about what's real and what's true and what's difficult, right? And so in the theories that are there, if you get the first three right, you focus on the A, the ambiguity is by, and I'm having a drawing my own head a blank right now, but you have the ability then to bring some clarity into this work, because you're making a decision, you know where you're going, you're using the strengths of your system. It gives you an opportunity to to think about that. And I really feel like in many ways, when you start looking at things like the craziness of our political system right now, the craziness of the environment, the heat waves, and all of this. This is not just in schools. It's around the world. It's everywhere. This is the world we live in today. And how do we get our kids ready to in school to live in a world like that? Yeah. And my sense is, school is almost too many times way, way too predictable. You have a schedule that you stick to. You're told there's going to be a test on Friday. You're told everything, and everything is predictable. So when you think about that, how do we get our kids engaged in some great activities and things I see you guys doing at Clayton Bradley? You're giving them a big, big world problem, giving them a big issue to solve, try to solve these issues, and give them as little guidance as you can, and let them start to begin to pack their, take the voyage that they're going to take. That's so much like the real world. And we have to prepare kids. You know, if you're going to prepare kids to play a basketball game, you practice basketball. Yeah, and in the world today, the world is very volatile, uncertain, complex, and ambiguous. We've got to get our kids to experience that.
Yeah. You know, whenever I was listening to you go through all of that, and you hit on this North Star concept, and this was big at the conference that Dr. Daggett, I know, mentioned several times. I think I was in a session or two that you'd mentioned as well. And we brought that back. We were talking, the team of us that went, we were talking about that of too often in education, it's, we think of education kind of like going using my GPS. You know, if I go out here to drive somewhere that I've not been, what do? I put it in my phone, and I expect my phone to give me the exact direction, turn by turn, to get there. And then, then you end up getting rerouted or whatever. But it gets me there, and typically in the time frame it tells me it's going to get me there, and it's straight, straight as lines as possible, or whatever. And it's like that's not the world. That's not the real world of learning and the real world of just living and interacting. And so this idea of having a compass, that came up. You guys showed, it's not this straight line from point A to point B. It gets messy in the middle and it squiggles all over the place. And it is more of that using a compass of saying, I know the direction I'm going and that endpoint is still where I want to be, but I can't just get there from this straight line from point A to point B. I'm going to hit some obstacles and I'm going to have to divert to the right or to the left or maybe even go backwards sometimes. But if I can keep that compass reminding me the direction that I need to get to, then we can make it. We can get there. We came back, we talked to our staff here about that of we understand that the world in education, the classroom, it gets messy sometimes. And you as a teacher go, I'm planning this 2-week, outline and by next Friday we're gonna take a test and, all the projects are gonna be finished, everybody's gonna present and then we have that random fire drill that has to happen and we thought we were going to be able to go outside and then it started storming and we had to change that and flip a couple of things. It was just reminding our teachers, like, it's okay to not have it all figured out every step of the way, because that's not the real world. Just like you were saying, if we're preparing them for this VUCA world, this world that has volatility, uncertainty, complexity, ambiguity, how are we preparing them for that if they never experience a little bit of that? And in that, then there's going to be failure, right? So yeah, if our kids aren't failing, then that's a problem. And I look back at my own education. I was a pretty good student, and I knew how to play the school game, And so I knew what I could do, and I stayed away from a lot of times what I couldn't do. I like my kids coming home, my personal kids coming home and having that challenge of something they had to overcome and they didn't get it right the first time and they had to go and talk to the teacher about how they can make up that standard, because we allow kids to make up standards and revisit concepts. And it's like, yeah, you need to go talk to your teacher about what happened here and realize that it's okay. You didn't get it the first time. You didn't get it the second time. Like, keep at it. Let's create some perseverance here. Let's create some grit to say, you can do this, But you might have to work a little bit harder than the person beside you. That's the real world, because there's going to be another concept that they're going to have to work harder than you're going to have to work. And it's okay to fail. That's part of learning. You really learn more about yourself when you fail than you do when you get it right.
Yep. And you know, the piece that's really critical, and you've been right along the line of it during most of the talk, is our systems need to just be more agile than they've ever been in the past. And we see agility systems that have to change. We see systems that change every now and then. We see them as being weak. Well, we know what to do. We do it. This is how we do it. You know, I hear that all the time in schools. And it's like, no, being agile is much smarter. And in this world today, we need to be more agile. So I think at the conference, I actually made the comment that I walk into a lot of schools, and most of them that I walk into, I feel like I'm at the Registry of Motor Vehicles office, where, you know, it's kind of like, no, this is what we do, and you do this, and you got to do this, and you got to do this, and that's how you get to here. And if you don't do those three steps, you don't go anywhere, you don't get your license, you don't get this, you don't get that. It's like, we're like that. We're like that in our schools. And it's like, we need to see that in the schools, students need to see us adjusting, being agile, adapting, moving. You may know I'm not fond of adapting. I'm more fond of anticipating and preparing for the future, because adapting means it already happened. But I get that. That does happen. But if you want to be a great system, you've got to be able to, you know, anticipate and prepare for those changes before they happen. That's what we do. And so I think there's a balance out there, and our schools need to just understand the need to be much more agile. And I look at it in so many different ways. I kind of laugh sometimes, because, you know, we're out there looking for teachers, and yet there are a lot of people out there that have a skill that could come into a building and help our kids learn.
Absolutely.
And we have a rule that says, you know, they have to be X. And I've seen some paraprofessionals be some of the greatest teachers I've ever seen. And I'm not discounting the profession. I'm just saying, look, it's a different world now. Content knowledge is almost everywhere. It is everywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to throw any water on it, but I mean, I do want to say that, you know, sometimes I see kids who have no knowledge of something, they start to learn it on their own. And when they start learning it on their own, and they start assessing themselves on their own, and then they know they got something, that's when we've made a big win in education.
Absolutely.
Because that, when we get kids, you know, as I say to adults, adults learn through andragogy. Adults know what they don't know. But if they don't know something, they know how to go after it and learn it. And when they learn it, they don't have to take a test to prove it to themselves, because they know that they know it. If we can transfer education in our schools to be something that models the idea of an adult learner, knowing what you don't know, knowing how to learn things that you don't know, and, you know, and not needing to have an assessment for it. You know, I think those are the things we need to start to really focus on. We have to focus on our students doing self-assessment. They've got to be able to assess. They've got to know, I know this a little bit, but not good enough yet. Okay, that's great. You know, when someone tells us that, I think that's a great win for us as educators.
Absolutely. And that's when they start to own their learning. And that's when it matters. You know, how do you get a kid to learn when they don't want to learn? You know, in reality, you can't. But if they can start to own that, you know, if they don't want to know it, then, you know, I can't beat it into their head. But at the point that they get enough of that inquisitive nature, enough of that reality of like, I really do want to know this, at that point, you can't stop the learning, because it's going to happen. They're going to seek that knowledge at that point. And so how do we get them to own that learning and to then have the tools to go after it? Because there's a lot of tools. There's a lot more tools now than there were back in the day. You know, I don't. My kids don't go to the encyclopedia down the hallway, you know, like I would at times growing up. So they have it at their fingertips. They have it on their phone. They have it on their computer, on their iPad, whatever may be the case. And so I want to be respectful of your time. I really appreciate you taking time to sit down and talk about this concept. And it's an honor that I'm the first one podcast that you've got to sit with as the senior fellow for Successful Practices Network. I'm gonna mark that down so that I can know that I was the first one. But I really appreciate it. And I thank you for the ways that you guys have partnered with Clayton Bradley. It's been a fun ride. And I think we've got a lot of similarities in thought, a lot of similarities in how we're approaching the future of education. And I appreciate the time.
Well, like I said earlier, you know, the future's not always, you know, the future's always present. It's just not evenly distributed. So in the school systems, there are schools like Clayton Bradley. They're more of a future focus site. And, you know, someday that'll be the model as we start to move on. But I'm excited about the work you all do. I think it's I love the passion that I see in the students as well as in the professionals that are in the building and anyone, all the team members that show up. It's a great place. And we need more like that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
This has been The Ignition Point, Clayton Bradley Academy's podcast, where every day we work to help students excel through critical thinking, problem solving, collaboration, and use of our lifelong guidelines and life skills. If you'd like to find out more about our school, you can visit us on our webpage, www.claytonbradleyacademy.org. You can find us on social media sites at CBASTEM or at Clayton Bradley Academy. We hope you have a wonderful day.